Blog Talk Radio.
You gotta love this, Lucas. Who wants the ring? Flashbulb, sparkles, we are underway.
Cannot play with them. Cannot win with them. Cannot coach with them. Can't do it. I want winners.
The new record, Michael Strahan. 22 and a half sacks, breaks the bar held by Mark Gatineau.
Just put your name on it. That's all I say. Be a man or a woman. Put your name on it.
Santonio with a touchdown.
I'm raising the ante. Anybody wants in, get in. Anybody wants out, get out.
Devin Hester, you are ridiculous.
That's got to be one of those top 10 plays on SportsCenter YouTube.
Emmitt Smith has eclipsed Walter Payton as the NFL's all-time rushing leader. And somewhere, sweetness is smiling.
One touchdown, we are world champions. Believe it, and it will happen.
Touchdown, Giants, with 35 seconds to go, and in the first. And the Giants, with the most improbable win, have won Super Bowl 42.
Control yourself. Tell them to stay calm. Let's keep our composure.
A lot of time, patience. Good
Skiller stuff. You're never too old for Skiller.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Boston Sports Beat. I am your host, Jesse Mayfield Sheehan, and I am joined by my colleague, Xander Manning. And it's been, quite the exciting week in the world of Boston sports. And, of course, a bunch of exciting things to come. We've got the Boston Marathon coming up in just a couple days, which I'm sure everybody in the city of Boston is pumped up for. Always such a big event, and even more so in the past couple of years. And on that note, like I said, lots of stuff has happened. And including in that was two very big legal convictions in the world of in the city of Boston. And first off was former Patriots tight end Aaron Hernandez, who was found guilty of first-degree murder for the killing of Odin Lloyd. So that was a huge conviction. And then the second one, Boston Marathon bomber Zohar Tsarnaev was convicted on all 30 counts that were held against him, and he could very well face the death penalty. So a lot of convictions, you know, lots of big-time headlines in the world of Boston sports, but, you know, we like to keep things fun on this show, so we're just going to focus on the sports aspect of it for now. Does that sound good to you, Xander?
Sounds good to me. I mean, I just want to say, too, it's a huge weight off our shoulders now with Zohar being gone. Just a huge weight, just saying.
Absolutely. And let's certainly hope that putting out a sentence does not take too long. We would all certainly like this to put this all behind us. I'm sure all of us would. But we're going to move on. We're going to talk some Boston sports. And now the regular season has wrapped up for the winter sports. And in the world of Boston, we've got some good news and some bad news. So, Xander, what would you like to hear first, the good news or the bad news?
Let's just get the bad news over with. Honestly, I like bad news first. You get that over with.
All right, let's start with the bad news. The bad news is that the Boston Bruins, 1 year removed from winning the President's Trophy, missed the playoffs this year, lost their last three games of the season, and got bounced from the playoffs for the first time since, I believe they said, 06-07 or something like that. It's first time in a while, for sure. And shortly afterward, General Manager Peter Chiarelli was canned. He is gone. He is no longer with the team. So definitely big moves already from the Boston Bruins. You know, regular season's over, but the entire season's not even over. They've already canned their GM. Coach Claude Julien might be next. So my first question to you, Xander, is was this the right move, firing Peter Chiarelli?
I mean, I understand their logic, but frankly, honestly, I do not know. I don't like this move. I mean, a lot of people in Boston don't like Chiarelli for all the stuff he did this year. The guy made some bad choices in the season, and they missed the playoffs. It's not that big of a deal, honestly. Like, I understand they're a little frustrated with what he did throughout the season, like trading Johnny Boyd, Chuck, all of those trades. But at the same time, just, like, think about it. You were President's Trophies just the year before, and just because he didn't re-sign some guys or made, like, one or two bad choices, and you guys were 1 point, or was it 2 points out of the playoffs, Jesse?
Yeah, it was really close. They just barely missed it.
you're 2 points out of the playoffs. I think it's ridiculous that you just go ahead and just fire your GM after you're 2 points out of the playoffs. I understand if you go from winning the President's Trophy to being where Buffalo is right now, then you fire everybody there. You dump the whole team. You pull a Billy Beane. But they barely missed the playoffs. I think it's a little ridiculous.
I think, and I read an article on this, I think this really all started with his signing of Tyler Seguin, one article I read said. It said, you know, it was too fast, it was for too many years and too much money, and it set the team back, and it resulted in them having to trade Seguin, which didn't pan out the way people had hoped. Louis Erickson rebounded this year, but overall has not been a good replacement. Riley Smith showed surprising promise his first season, but didn't, you know, has sort of dropped off this year. And the fact is, Chiarelli just put the Bruins in some cap trouble with the deals that he's made, and that's the result. And that's what resulted in the loss of guys like Iginla and Boychuk. Is they had to shave cap space to keep other players. I mean, when you look at the money that guys like Kelly or Greg Campbell were getting, you know, I have all the respect for Greg Campbell as a hard player, but, you know, those guys were not worth the money they were getting.
But also, look at Daniel Paille. Daniel Paille was commanding $2-3 million a year to play on the fourth line and play -19?
Exactly.
He's one guy I'm glad is gone, but I'll admit, Gregory Campbell, I'm going to miss that.
I think there's a lot. I think there's a lot of people in Boston who will agree with you on that. It has been announced that Campbell and Paille will not be re-signed. They will be leaving Boston, along with Chiarelli departing. A lot of departures in Boston. But as I was saying, I think it's just, you know, when you see a mismanagement of money that leads to such cap problems as the Bruins have had this year, which really led to all the difficult deals that Chiarelli had to make. It's understandable to an extent, but I definitely get what you're saying. That does seem like the classic Boston sports thing of, oh, we didn't win this year. We won last year, but we didn't win this year. Let's can everybody. So it's tough to swallow, but he certainly leaves a good legacy with having brought the Stanley Cup back to Boston for the first time in a few decades. So I think Peter Chiarelli certainly has plenty to hang his hat on here in Boston. But on that note, I'm going to very quickly, just for these last 2 minutes for this first segment, I'm going to ask you this question. When a new GM is hired, what's the first thing he's got to do after he comes into this Bruins organization the way it is right now, Xander?
Sign defense. Get defense. I don't care how you do it. Get defense. Get backup for Tuukka. I mean, everyone's been saying, Tuukka's fine, Subban, he's fine with Svedberg. He's not. He is not. There's no clear backup between those two. Subban let in 3 goals and was dumped back down to the minors. Svedberg has been a very, he's either on one side of the spectrum or he's on the other. He's either amazing or he's terrible. You need a guy who's somewhere in the middle who can back Tuukka up when you need to. You need another goalie, first of all. That needs to be your first priority. Second priority is you need to get some defense, and not just defense, you need defensive defense. You need guys who will block shots. You need guys to replace Gregory Campbell. I know Gregory Campbell is a center, but you need guys who are hard-nosed grinders. You don't need scorers. You don't need snipers. Get some defense.
Now, you see, I disagree with you on that. I mean, it's hard for me to say that the team needs to improve its defense when they ranked in the top 10 again this year. I mean, certainly they had a drop-off in defense, but not nearly the drop-off they had in offense. I mean, they were in the bottom half of the league in offense. I disagree with you. I think they do need snipers. I think they do need some very talented wingers to come on and be the scoring presence that they had with a guy like, again, the last year. I mean, a lot of people just dropped off on the offensive end this year, and they need to find that production somewhere. They need to find that elite score that they can count on. And I think with defense, I mean, as much as it was a downgrade, Tuukka held up. I mean, he played very well this year. I think it's sort of undervalued how well he did this year, given the lack of support he had. And, you know, I think he really, you know, played an excellent season, but I think the priority has to be on the offensive side. That's what I'll say. I definitely respect what you're saying, though. The Bruins are primarily a defensive team, so having that elite defense would certainly help.
Well, also, you need a guy who's willing to play physical, too. Lucic has been soft, to say the least, this year. Soft. That doesn't even begin to cover it. He's been afraid to hit anybody, and then Pasternak is the guy who steps in and says, I'll do it. I'll do the hits. You don't need a guy like that. You don't need a guy like Marchand messing up their shoulders so they can't score goals. You need them playing the way they normally do as a sniper or as a speed skater. You don't need them playing physical.
Well, we'll certainly see what moves the new GM makes once he's hired, but we'll be right back soon. We'll have that good news for you in terms of the winter teams right after this. Experiencing a bit of some technical difficulties, it appears. My connection to the radio is not, to blogtalkradio.com, is not working out so hot right now, so we're going to skip the commercial break for right now, and we're going to move on. We're going to move on to that good news, I promise you, in a minute. We're going to give it to you right away because, I don't know, fire sale, I guess. But on that good news, while the Bruins did miss the playoffs, one Boston team did make the playoffs, and that's the Boston Celtics. I said it, people. The Boston Celtics made the playoffs. They are the number 7 seed, just a year removed from not making the playoffs and getting the number 6 overall pick. So this is a team removed from a lottery year, and they make the playoffs. So absolutely outstanding performance from the Celtics down the stretch. But now, in the first round, they face the number 2-seeded Cleveland Cavaliers. LeBron James, Kevin Love, Kyrie Irving, all those guys. Certainly a tough matchup. So, Xander, my first question to you is, what are the keys to this series against the Cavaliers?
First of all, I just want to say, I'm looking forward to this matchup. I'm not going to make any predictions, because I don't want to curse anything, but the keys of the series for me are going to be winning at least one game at home and one game on the road in the first 4 games. You need to have a balanced game. You can't just be the team that wins at home, because they're not going to make it very far if they only win at home. Granted, they have great numbers at home this year, and they've got great numbers against the Cavaliers. They've won every game except for one, but I think the keys are going to be winning at least 2 of the first 4 games for the Celtics and putting up a fight at least in the other games and not just flopping in the other games.
Absolutely. So certainly going to be tough for them. I think the key has definitely got to be they've got to play good defense. They've got to put a couple guys on LeBron, obviously. I mean, he's going to drop, 20, 30 the way he does. But I think what they've got to make sure they do is they've got to make sure they have a good defensive guy on Kyrie Irving. And they've got some pretty good front court defenders with Marcus Smart and Avery Bradley, so they might be able to accomplish that. Where things are going to get tough is down low. The Cleveland Cavaliers have Kevin Love, and he is a strong presence down low, both offense, especially on the offense. And, that could be tough for some of the younger guys that the Celtics have. It could be tough with Jared Sullinger still coming back from an injury. That's going to be a tough matchup for them. So I think the key matchup is trying to win those battles down low and just maintaining strong defense. I mean, their offense will produce, but it's a question of can they hold off the Cavaliers' best scorers? And that's certainly something that, will remain to be seen. But my next question regarding this is, I know you said you don't want to make any predictions, but it seems like right now a lot of people have pretty much resigned the Celtics to lose this series. The Cavaliers are one of the best teams, and the Celtics are still in a bit of a rebuild mode. But people are, making all kinds of guesses about how many games the Celtics might take. So, Xander, my question to you is, how many games do you think the Celtics will take in this series?
All right, so much for no predictions, but whatever.
Sorry, man, we got to do it. It's part of the business.
Well, all right, let's just say I won't make any predictions in the first one because it's just keys. But, okay, more importantly, how many games are they going to win? Frankly, the way they played against the Cavaliers, I would not be surprised to see them take this series. I would not, honestly, I may sound a bold prediction. Celtics coming out and beating the Cavs, who have been touted as one of the top teams in the league all season. But I wouldn't count them out. I would not be surprised because what the Celtics, another one of the keys that I think the Celtics need in this series that I didn't say before is they need to make this a one-sided attack for the Cavaliers. They need to shut down everyone and just let one person attack. That way that person will get worn down. The other people won't necessarily want to play as hard if it's only one-sided. Like, they need to just give, like, let LeBron go out or something, go off or something like that. Let Kevin Love go off. But don't let him give the ball to Kyrie Irving or LeBron James. That's the key to their game, passing the ball around and not being selfish. The Celtics need to make this a selfish series. And if they make this a selfish series, I would not be surprised if they took it.
Wow. I mean, you know, that certainly is a bold prediction. I don't think anyone else is thinking the Celtics. But you make some good points. You know, the Celtics, they're a hard team to figure out, just given how they've been playing. Their team-oriented style, their young guys full of energy. It's certainly hard to pin down exactly how they'll do on any given night. However, like you said before, this is a team that has done significantly better at home as opposed to on the road. And Cleveland is going to have home court advantage in this series. I think the Celtics at home could certainly take a game or two from the Cavaliers. So I'll predict about two games. I'll predict they take two games, which honestly I think would be pretty good, given just how strong an opponent they have and given just how much that would help the confidence for these young players to get those couple of wins. I say Celtics take two games, but unfortunately get bounced in six. So that's my call. But you think they're going to win. I got to say, it would be interesting to see if you were right on this. I think you'll certainly have a significant amount of bragging rights in the sports world if you manage to predict that correctly.
Yes, I would. I mean, they're definitely the underdogs coming into this series. You can't deny that. They've got one of the better and more balanced and more depth-oriented attack. They have a very deep attack. And like I said, I wouldn't be surprised because basically the Cavs' weapons are all on that starting five. LeBron, Kyrie, and Kevin Love. That's all there when they start the game. And then you get into their bench, and it's not as balanced as the Celtics. Like, the Celtics have Marcus Smart. They have Evan Turner. They have Kelly Olynyk. They have Isaiah Thomas. That's four guys, none of whom are all starting. Some of them are, but not all of them. That's what I want to play.
I think Turner and Smart are starting these days, but I see your point, definitely. I mean, it definitely is very two different styles in that sense, in that, like you say, the Cleveland is more the conventional team where you put your five best guys out there and they provide you with most of your points. The Celtics, you know, sometimes their best scoring teams tend to be their bench teams, their secondary units. And their secondary units are among the best in the NBA. And, you know, Isaiah Thomas, like you said, he comes off the bench. He comes off the bench with guys like, you know, Jay Crowder and Kelly Olynyk and Jonas Jerebko. And they play with so much fire and so much energy and so much chemistry, quite frankly. It's a very well-formed second unit that matches up well against any second unit in the NBA, I feel like. Save for maybe the Spurs, just because that team's depth is disgusting. But
they get everybody.
Yeah, but when you look at it, it really comes down to can the Celtics hold off that primary unit from the Cavs, because their starters aren't always their strongest players. They tend to be the ones that get the brunt of the punishment. They tend to be the ones with the lowest plus minuses. You know, I think Tyler Zeller is one of the lowest plus minuses on the team, and he's their starting center. But that just comes from him facing all these starting players. So it certainly comes down to how much punishment can those Celtics starters take? How much can they, you know, hold off the Cleveland starters so that the backup guys can come in and sort of bring them back into the game?
Cavs, and then, like I said, tie them out, bring in your scoring unit, and then they can't do anything about it, make a comeback, and boom, four-game series over.
All right. So, wait, are you predicting the Celtics in four? Please tell me you're not predicting the Celtics in four.
No. I'm saying they win four games. No, they're definitely not going to sweep the Cavaliers. No. I'm saying
the Celtics.
Okay,
because I was like,
six.
Wait a second. Xander, are you okay right now? I was like, am I going to have to call you an ambulance?
No. I don't need to go to the mental hospital. It's okay. No, I give it to the Celtics in six games, not four.
All right. Wow, six games. Well, we'll certainly see how it plays out. Game one is tomorrow for the Celtics, and we'll see how things play out for them. We're going to move on now. We're going to move on to a team that is in its regular season right now, and that's the Boston Red Sox. And they encountered their fair share of struggles on the pitching side of things in the past week, you know, giving up, 14 runs in one game, giving up 10 in another. You know, a lot of the starters had their fair share of struggles. And a lot of people seem to be starting to push the panic button on the Sox starting rotation, you know. And I know this is such a concern during the off season, but, I mean, the Sox are only like 10 games into their season, and they're at the top of the American League East. So, I mean, given the record, but also given how the pitching did and all the concerns that were already there, I mean, is it time to push the panic button on the starting rotation, Xander?
This is exactly like the Porcello deal, the Porcello extension. Way too soon. Way too soon. This is only the third run through with the rotation right now, today with Buchholz starting. This is only the... You're 10 games into the season, and you've won 7 of them. Why are you complaining? The bullpen has been very strong. The offense has been amazing. Okay, so they've let in a few runs. If you're winning games, then why complain about the starting rotation? Unless you're cutting it down to the wire like last night with Bogarts' walk-off single. That's a completely other story, but they're still winning games. I don't see why you start complaining about the rotation. They've come... The only reason that they're 7-3 right now is because they lost the last game of the series when they were on the verge of a sweep. Otherwise, they would be 10-0 right now. They've been playing amazing. I don't understand why you complain about the rotation so soon.
It certainly is tough, and I like your comparison, given that the Porcello deal was sort of like, okay, too fast to call this guy good. Now you're like, oh, it's too fast to call these guys bad, which I certainly agree with. It's very quick into the season. You know, you're only a couple weeks in, and it's very premature to be doing that. But again, you know, that's just a classic, you know, fans panicking when things don't go perfectly, you know, which happens.
If they're still not very good 2 months after the, like, a month or so after the All-Star break, then you start getting concerned because it's playoff time, and you need to prepare your starters because the starting pitching is the key to the playoffs. But
exactly.
10 games into the season, you have 152 games to fix that. Come on. It's stupid.
Well, we'll certainly see how the team rebounds from that, from the tough week they had. We'll certainly see if the pitching rotation can prove what they were trying to say all along during the offseason, which is, they can be a strong rotation. That's what they've been saying, and we'll see if they can prove it. But we're going to move on now. We're going to move on to something a little less serious, perhaps, in that the New England Patriots have their visit to the White House coming up next Thursday, and cornerback Darrelle Revis, former team cornerback Darrelle Revis, who was with the team, you know, when they won the Super Bowl, but since has been signed by the New York Jets, which led to a whole bunch of tampering charges on both sides from both teams to each other. He said that he will attend. And some people have said, you know, that maybe that this could be really awkward, given how he left, given all that's happened since. But, you know, on another note, he did help them win the championship. He has every right to go. So my question to you, Xander, is it the right choice that Revis is making, going to attend the White House visit? And are things going to be awkward for him and the team? What do you think?
Here's my question first. Are Ridley and Vereen going to be there? Do you know anything about that?
You know, people haven't exactly been writing articles about whether or not those guys will be there.
That's
but I would imagine...
Okay, then. That's my first question, then. Are Ridley and Vereen going to be there, too? Because if they are, then remember this year when we won the Super Bowl. Like, it's a team together. The team's getting back together, meeting with Obama. Great. But if it's just Darrelle Revis showing up and those two aren't actually showing up, then yes, things will be very awkward because he left. Enough said. He went to New York. He left. It's almost like a guy, if you get traded in the offseason for the World Series, you got traded. You don't go. You just get your ring at the end of the season. Or when they get their rings, you get one sent to you. Enough said. Done. This is going to be awkward.
It might be. It certainly is tough given the team he went back to, given how things played out, which was not ideal. But my feeling is he was such a big part of that Super Bowl team. He was such a big part of a very improved defense, and I feel like he's earned it. He's earned a chance to go to the White House. And a lot of joking commenters have said, you know, this is probably the only time he's going to go now that he's back with the Jets. You know, I can't say for certain. Who knows? The Jets might turn things around.
Yeah, okay.
But, hey, you never know. You never know.
All right, Rex Ryan's gone. I'll give them a slight chance. Maybe they'll win seven games this year.
Just remember this. The Arizona Cardinals made a Super Bowl a few years ago. And, you know, it wasn't too long ago that the Oakland Raiders were playing in a Super Bowl. So let's just remember that teams
Cardinals
can turn on a dime.
Cardinals weren't that bad last year.
Yeah, the Cardinals weren't that bad. That I know.
But the Raiders, I will admit that is a bit amusing now that I think about it.
It is. Really is. But on that note, you know, I do feel like Revis really has earned this trip, you know. He did a lot for this team, and, you know, if he wants to go, I say let him go. You know, will it be awkward? I honestly don't think so. Not as much as people think it's going to be. Because, I mean, that whole thing with the tampering charges, the negotiations, I mean, that happens up on a higher level. I mean, maybe things get awkward with Belichick, but, I mean, if you can manage to have a conversation with Bill Belichick without things getting at least a little bit awkward, then wow. But I feel like with the players, they understand that this is your job, and sometimes you go to a place that will give you more money. You know, I think that gets lost on a lot of sports fans, you know, who want teams to be loyal to the team because they see it as more than just a job. They see it as something else, but this these players' jobs. You know, sometimes they go to other teams to get more money because it's their job. It's how they make a living. But, you know, so I feel like I don't think it's going to be as awkward as people think it's going to be, you know, at least among the players. I think, you know, they'll welcome Revis and because they know he helped them win a championship and he was a part of that team. So I feel like it's not going to be as awkward.
My just thing about that is the operative word in that sentence was. He was a part of this team. He's not anymore. Yes, I'll admit, yes, he earned it, but he doesn't deserve it anymore. He left. Goodbye. Sayonara. I'm sorry. Don't go. Don't go as far as pulling a Tim Thomas, making up some bullcrap reason why you can't go, but just don't go. He's going to get a lot of scrutiny in the media. I think it's just, I don't think it's a good idea.
I feel like he's earned it, but that's my opinion, but we're going to call it quits on this episode of the Boston Sports Beat. Please tune in next week for our next show. And if you want to follow us on Twitter, you can follow Xander at DM Sports Report. And you can follow me at JGMS88. Thank you for watching this episode. And best of luck to the Celtics in their series. And hopefully the Bruins will turn things around soon and we'll see who our new GM is. And everyone, please enjoy your Patriots Day on Monday and enjoy the Boston Marathon. Have a good night, everybody.